to today's reading of Sports Today, a one-hour reading of sports news from 7 to 8 p.m. every Tuesday and Thursday. My name is Bill, volunteer reader here at Some Sounds of Arizona. And let's begin today's reading with a feature entitled Future Hall of Fame Manager, Born Again in a New National League Job. And this feature is written by Bob Nightingale, columnist for USA Today, Dateline Goodyear, Arizona. It's still dark outside, but Terry Francona is already swimming laps at his hotel, driving 6.5 miles to his Goodyear ballpark office, grabbing coffee, meeting with coaches, and then carving out time to talk about the newest adventure in his life. It's 6:55 in the morning, and Francona is speaking passionately, enthusiastically, sometimes emotionally about his job as manager of the Cincinnati Reds. He is not making any promises, but Francona is making it clear that he is not coming to Cincinnati to lose. Our job every day, he says, is to try to kick somebody's expletive, unquote. He's done a lot of butt-whipping in his 23-year managerial career that will lead him to the Hall of Fame with 2 World Series titles, 3 pennants, 11 postseason appearances, and 1,950 victories, 13th most in history. But Cooperstown can wait. For now, he's on a mission to lead the Reds to where they have not gone in 35 years, back when another new manager walked in, turned a 75-win, 87-loss, fifth-place team around, and went wire-to-wire, stunning the Oakland Athletics and winning the 1990 World Series. Lou Piniella came in and everything changed, Hall of Fame shortstop Barry Larkin told USA Today Sports. It's going to be the same thing here with Tito. The dude is so authentic. From day one, he assigned accountability and responsibility. He has created such a great culture here. There's an expectation, because he's had success, that he wouldn't have come back here if he didn't believe that we can be successful. People in here believe that we're going to do some damage because of this man. He's just a special, special guy. I would have loved to play for him, unquote. It appeared that no one would play for Francona, age 65, again when he stepped away from the game after the 2023 season, his 11th season with the Cleveland Guardians. He was in constant pain all year. He walked away after the season, knowing that he needed to take care of his health and wondering if he had lost his passion. I'm trying to tell people, and I don't think they really believe me, but I really didn't miss it that much, Francona said in his office last week. I had a good year. When you know you need to step away, you're probably a little late stepping away. I felt I was shortchanging some people over there in Cleveland, and that's not a good feeling. So you start taking care of yourself, and you feel good, and I still wasn't thinking about managing. I was starting to think about, okay, what do I want to do? How busy do I want to get? Unquote. Francona said that he received a telephone call late in the season from an executive asking if he was interested in managing a club. Francona was confused. Was he missing something? Didn't they already have a manager? Yes, Francona was told, but if he were interested, they would fire their manager and hire him. End of conversation. Francona doesn't work that way. Francona told them that he would never want to be responsible for someone losing their job. Others might be able to do that in good conscience, not him. I would never do that, Francona said. Never, ever, unquote. If the Reds had called him while David Bell was still employed, the answer would have emphatically been no, too. He loved Bell's father, Buddy, when he played with the Reds and worked with him in the Chicago White Sox organization. He always wanted the best for David Bell, hoping he'd have tremendous success. The Reds, who reached the postseason just once in Bell's 6 years, going 409 wins, 456 losses, and fired him on September 22nd with 5 games left in the season. They named bench coach Freddie Benavidez the interim coach and were putting together a list of about 100 potential candidates. It was a few hours after the Bell firing when Hall of Fame broadcaster Marty Brenneman, who's been one of Francona's closest friends since he played for the Mets in 1987, telephoned him. Francona was in Salt Lake City with two buddies after watching the University of Arizona, his alma mater, play a football game against Utah. We started talking and I just said, "Hey, would you want to come back?" Brenneman said. "They fired David Bell today." Tito said, "Well, I wouldn't say no to anyone." That's when I knew that things had changed, unquote. Brenneman was stunned by Francona's reaction. He and his wife, Amanda, visited Francona at his Tucson, Arizona home in February of 2024 and left convinced that he was done managing. "We played golf in the day and my wife cooked at night," Brenneman said. "He didn't have any pots and pans, so we had to go buy them first. We golfed and talked and told stories, laughed, and when we left, I told Amanda, there is no way on God's green earth that he's going to be coming back. He's happy, he's healthy, and he doesn't miss it. He's never coming back," unquote. Brenneman got off the phone and quickly telephoned Nick Kroll, the Reds' president of baseball operations. He asked Kroll if they would be interested in interviewing Francona. "You kidding?" Kroll couldn't believe it. He didn't really know Francona, but considered him one of the finest managers in the past 30 years. He asked Brenneman for Francona's number, called him, and 1 week later, Kroll and general manager Brad Meter were flying to Tucson to interview Francona at his home. They were 45 minutes into the 5.5-hour interview when Kroll knew that he had his man and Francona knew that he wanted the job. "It was one of the best conversations I've ever had," Kroll said. "I mean, I felt that we were on the same page with everything that we were discussing. We had some things lined up for interviews the next week that we were going to go through, but at the end of this day, we just felt it was pretty obvious that he was the right guy," unquote. Said Francona, "It was comfortable, and they seemed comfortable. The last thing I ever want to do is to get in a situation where I'm not comfortable. I mean, I don't have to do this, right?" unquote. The only real question that Kroll had at the end of the interview was whether Francona felt his health would permit him to go through the daily grind once again. Francona has been a walking New England Journal of Medicine. He has had both hips and knees replaced. He has had his right shoulder replaced. He has nearly a dozen screws holding together one of his feet. He had surgery for an irregular heartbeat, recurring blood clots, a staph infection, and 2 hernias. The last time he counted, he has had 45 surgeries in his life, including 22 on his knees. Francona, who lost 25 pounds in his year off, told Kral that he felt great, swims every day, believes he's up for the long grind, and, just in case they needed convincing, offered, quote, "You want me to do some jumping jacks for you?" unquote. Red Zoner Bob Castellini was on a plane the next day to join the conversation, and a day later, Francona was hired, agreeing to a 3-year contract with an option. The announcement that day set the city afire, Brenneman said. You cannot believe how excited the city is. And you can't believe how excited the Tito is. It's like he's been born again, unquote. Texas Rangers manager Bruce Bochy, the winner of 4 World Series titles, and San Francisco Giants manager Bob Melvin, a 3-time Manager of the Year winner, can certainly relate. Bochy, now age 69, who took 3 years off, managed the Rangers to the 2023 World Series championship. Melvin, age 63, who took a year off, returned to lead the Oakland A's to back-to-back division titles in 2012 and 2013. You get away, no doubt it not only energizes you, Bochy said, but you know that it gives you time to heal up. It is a grind. There's no getting around that. It's what we do. You're busy, not just the physical part, but the mental side of it. Getting away, I'm sure, freshened him up, unquote. And Melvin said, quote, there are baseball guys, and then there are baseball guys, and he is one. I remember when I was out in the year 2010, and when I came back, I was completely invigorated. This job can beat you down a little bit. I know health-wise for him, now he feels better than he has in his career. This is in his blood, so it doesn't surprise me that he's back, and talking to him, he's really excited about the season, unquote. The Reds are an historic franchise that has gone 30 years without advancing in the postseason, the longest drought in not only baseball, but also in the NFL, NBA, and NHL, too. The Reds haven't finished higher than 3rd place in the National League Central since winning it in 2012. The Chicago Cubs may be heavily favored to win the division, and the Milwaukee Brewers have dominated it in recent years, but the Reds believe that this could be 1990 all over again. If we stay healthy, we'll win it, Reds pitcher Emilio Pagan said. I really believe that. This is a good team. And now we've got a Hall of Fame manager, unquote. This is the kind of impact that Francona is already making throughout the organization. The Reds gush over his authenticity. What you see is what you get. If you're afraid of the truth, you'd better not ask the question. Francona spoke to every single player on his team within the first 48 hours that he took the job and personally met with each of them in his office at the start of spring training. When he wanted to hire his longtime friend and veteran coach Brad Mills, he even flew to Laredo, Texas to discuss it with Benavidez. Francona assured Benavidez that he was still wanted and that they would be co-bench coaches. He's one of the best human beings, Brenneman said, in the history of mankind, unquote. When Francona addressed the team at the start of spring training, veteran reliever Brent Suter called it the best speech he'd ever heard in his career. Francona actually had to stop 4 times just to collect his breath while speaking to the team. Quote, the cool thing about this speech was not just what he said, but the genuineness with which he spoke, Suter said. I mean, he was charged up. He had to reload a few times because he is so passionate, so enthused, so excited. Here's a Hall of Famer who's just pumped up to play baseball, and he's very emphatic, like, we're all in this together. Every time he's talked since then, everyone is just rapt with attention and comes away just ready to run through a wall. It's magnetic, it's contagious, and it's really powerful. I've talked to a lot of guys and staff members, and they say I've never had a conversation like this with a manager in my whole career. This is amazing. We're a sleeping giant that's about to be woken up, unquote. Francona, raised in a baseball clubhouse as the son of 15-year veteran Tito Francona, is usually the first to arrive and the last to leave each day. Players stop by and listen to his tales of playing for Pete Rose, managing Michael Jordan, and breaking the 86-year curse of the Bambino in Boston with Big Poppy and Manny Ramirez. Still, he refuses to bask in the past glory. He doesn't need to hear about his triumphs in Boston or turning around Cleveland and having them oh so close to winning the 2016 World Series title. When the Reds opened spring training this year with split squad games against his old team, the Guardians, at home and the Milwaukee Brewers at their ballpark in Maryvale, he chose to hit the road. He simply didn't want to have his team see his former players and coaches coming over for a huge fest to reminisce about old times. Guardians pitching coach Carl Willis, who was with Francona for 6 years, is just 100 yards away in the complex next door in Goodyear, but still hasn't seen him. The Reds are Francona's team now. This is where his loyalty lies. He wishes the Guardians the best, but when they play against one another, he wants to kick their expletive, unquote. It was no different than when Francona faced the Red Sox, where he managed 8 years while with Cleveland. Sure, it's okay to exchange some pleasantries and visit old friends, but when the game starts, he wanted to beat you to a pulp. This is why Reds coach Mike Napoli, who played for Francona in 2016, did not hesitate joining his staff, hoping one day it could lead to a managerial future. Honestly, it's hard to explain, but he just makes you feel really good, said Napoli, who spent the last 5 years on the Cubs coaching staff. Quote, he really wants to be the best player. He wants you to be the best player, and his personality brings that out of you. He put his confidence in you as a player and lets you know that things are going to be all right. He's just such a genuine person. He treats everyone the same, and you won't find anyone more loyal, unquote. It was Francona's presence that played a role in free agent outfielder Austin Hayes' decision to sign with the Reds, knowing that Francona's style of play made it a perfect fit for Hayes after coming from Philadelphia. Hiring Tito was definitely a factor, Hayes said. I like to play hard. I like to play fast. And I like to run. I like to play defense. The way I go about my business and play the game is a perfect fit for the team that he wants, unquote. Said starter Wade Miley, who also signed as a free agent, quote, who wouldn't want to play for Tito? The guy is a winner. The talent is ridiculous here, but they needed some direction, learning how to win. When I was with Milwaukee, we ended up beating them a lot because they didn't know how to win. They didn't know how to step on the throat. That's going to change, unquote. The Reds now believe that They have all that they need. They have a fabulous young pitching staff led by Hunter Green, who had a breakout season last year with a 9-win, 5-loss record and 2.75 ERA. Shortstop Ellie De La Cruz is one of the game's most talented young players, hitting 25 homers and 65 steals last season. And prized infielder Matt McClain is back after missing all of last season with shoulder surgery. He's obviously a great leader, speaks with great conviction, and his track record precedes him, Green said. I think it's a great feeling as a player to have somebody that not only has the support, but the experience to make the right chess moves behind the scenes. When you feel like you could trust somebody that's making those chess moves behind the scenes, it's a really good feeling. Hopefully we can build a great legacy moving forward here, unquote. Francona, who won the Red Sox first World Series since 1918 and nearly broke the curse in Cleveland that has now stretched for 77 years, believes that the Reds are on the verge of doing something special now too. He's invigorated, he's motivated, and yes, he is healthy, even if he sometimes uses his fungo bat as a cane when no one's paying attention. I'm really looking forward to this, he said. I didn't need a guarantee. I don't ask what our payroll is. I just wanted a chance to win. I know people aren't picking us to win. Whatever. I really don't give a bleep. No one knows, but I love the fact that maybe we can make a difference. All I know is that we've got a chance to be pretty good. Unquote. And again, that feature is entitled Future Hall of Fame Manager Born Again in New National League Managing Job, written by Bob Nightingale, columnist for USA Today. And in another baseball feature, this one's entitled Once Worried, Dave Roberts Now Secure. This feature also written by Bob Nightingale of USA Today, Dateline Phoenix. Los Angeles Dodgers manager Dave Roberts privately worried about his job last fall, wondering if he would be fired if they suffered another first-round exit in October. They were down 2-1 to the San Diego Padres in one of the best-of-five National League Division Series. They had no starting pitcher available in Game 4 and were forced to go with a bullpen game. All-star first baseman Freddie Freeman couldn't play because of a badly sprained ankle, and shortstop Miguel Rojas, who injured his groin, tearfully had to inform Roberts that he couldn't play either. I woke up that day feeling really bad, and I couldn't play, Rojas told USA Today Sports last week. I told him, Doc, I'm really sorry, man, but I can't play today. I can't really walk. He texted me right back, saying, Miggy, we're going to win the World Series this year, and we're going to win it next year together, unquote. That was really special to me because we were 1 game away from not even making it out of the National League Division Series, and he's got the confidence on his team that we were going to win. You read the message, and you don't believe it until it's starting to happen, unquote. The Dodgers, having to rely on an 8-reliever bullpen game in Game 4, won 8-0 at Petco Park and 2-0 in Game 5 at Dodger Stadium. They wound up winning 10 of their last 13 postseason games and cruised to the World Series title in 5 games over the New York Yankees. They relied on only 3 starters and used 4 bullpen games throughout the postseason. And there was Roberts last week signing a 4-year, $32 million contract extension through the year 2029. I can't talk about it so much, but obviously there is some closure, he said. I'm excited. This is the place where I always wanted to be. I just love what we're doing. This is pretty special. There's obviously things off the field that are important. I try to make sure that my focus stays on the players and the game and the Dodgers organization. I think I've done a good job. But the other part of that stuff is just part of the job, and I'm looking forward to some closure for sure, unquote. Roberts was in the final year of his 3-year contract extension that paid him $4 million this season, and he now doubles his contract, making him the highest paid manager on an annual average value basis. Roberts, who has won 2 World Series titles and has the highest winning percentage of any manager in Major League Baseball history outside the Negro Leagues, will be paid less overall than Chicago Cubs manager Craig Counsell's 5-year, $40 million contract of a year ago. But Counsell was a free agent. Roberts was not interested in testing the market for the potential of a larger contract. You guys all know this is where I want to be, Roberts, age 52, said this spring. I just think it all comes down to value. And I think whatever anyone does, they want their value. But I do feel the body of work is pretty dang good, unquote. Indeed, Roberts, who was hired after the 2015 season to replace Don Mattingly, has led the Dodgers to 4 National League pennants, 8 division titles, and 9 postseason berths in 9 years, winning 907 regular season and postseason games. The Dodgers have won at least 100 regular season games in 5 of the last 6 full seasons. The only season that they didn't win the National League West under Roberts was in 2021, when they won 106 games but finished 2nd to the Giants, who had 107 victories. We are all excited, third baseman Max Muncy said. I couldn't be happier for him. I already told him that dinner is on him, unquote. Still, if they had not gotten past the Padres, who knows what would have happened to Roberts' job security. I do think that if we didn't win that game, it would have become very noisy, Roberts said this spring. A team that was obviously super talented to lose 3 years in a row in the first round, albeit it takes all of us to win and lose, but I do think that calls for my job would have been heightened, unquote. We'll never know for sure what would have happened to Roberts, but last week his players appeared more genuinely excited for him than Roberts himself. He deserves this so much, Rojas said. He has put in the time. He's been through a lot, you know. He's always mentioned how special it's been for him to be the manager of this ball club, and how special it is for him to be in front of this clubhouse and this franchise. He embodies what it means to be a good leader. And that's what I really care about, the personality, the character, and always communicating with everybody. That's why I gave him a big hug today, because I know how hard it's been, unquote. The World Series title was the franchise's first in a full season since 1988, making Roberts only the 3rd Dodgers manager to win multiple World Series titles. It's interesting where you don't win a series and you can feel calls for your job, Roberts said in February. But you win the World Series, and now people are saying that you're going to Cooperstown, unquote. the only active managers who have won multiple World Series titles are Bruce Bochy of the Texas Rangers and the Cincinnati Reds' Terry Francona, each of whom are considered locks for the Hall of Fame. Roberts will be one of only seven managers this century who have managed one team for at least 10 years, joining Mike Socia, Ron Gardenhire, and Bochy, Joe Girardi with the Yankees, and Bob Melvin, Francona, and Kevin Cash. The Dodgers, who had only two managers in 43 years with Walter Austin and Tommy Lasorda from 1954 to 1996, now continue the tradition with Roberts. Said Rojas, "It couldn't happen to a better person," unquote. And again, that feature entitled "Once Worried, Dave Roberts Now Secure," written by Bob Nightingale of USA Today. And in another baseball feature, headline reads, "Yankees Expectations Not Changed Without Cole." This feature written by Pete Caldera of the USA Today Network. Gerrit Cole was 17 years old when the Yankees drafted and failed to sign him out of high school. The prized right-hander was 29 years old when the Yankees finally landed their quote-unquote white whale, general manager Brian Cashman's term of pursuit, as a $324 million free agent. "We need to win a world championship, and ideally more than one," said Cole on the day of his Yankees introduction. In 2024, Cole and the Yankees made it to their first World Series together, but the Yanks have not won at all since Cole's sophomore year at UCLA. Now the Yankees won't have Cole impacting a pennant race until mid-2026 at the earliest due to Tommy John surgery. The ace had the procedure last week in Los Angeles. He got the warning notice on Cole's elbow last spring training when he missed nearly 3 months of the regular season with nerve inflammation. A week earlier, Luis Gill was diagnosed with a high lat strain, taking him out of the Yankees' rotation until perhaps July. That news, coupled with Cole's surgery, is how quickly the Yankees went from a starting pitcher surplus to counting on rookie Will Warren and considering 38-year-old Carlos Carrasco. But the expectations haven't changed, not with a $300 million payroll and not with defending American League MVP Aaron Judge in his prime. Certainly not in an extremely winnable American League, in a division where the Yankees still look like a favorite over the Orioles and certainly over the Red Sox, Blue Jays, and Rays. Of course, we will revisit that question again if there's another injury in a now fragile starting rotation, or if there's a problem scoring runs in a Giancarlo Stanton-less lineup, or if we're still asking who's the best fit at leadoff hitter and cleanup hitter by the All-Star break. By the Major League Baseball trade deadline, maybe the Yankees have some bold-faced names arriving to boost their World Series hopes, but don't bet on it happening sooner. Normally, the more significant opportunities don't exist until the trade deadline, Cashman told reporters last week, including MajorLeagueBaseball.com. And the general manager seemed to brace Yankees fans not to anticipate any significant outside help sooner or later. Quote, "You hope that you can withstand injuries and avoid injuries early from spring training up through the amateur draft, because going outside the organization is just that much more difficult to do, unquote, Cashman told reporters. So we'll rely on what we have, Cashman added, who will explore a quote-unquote limited marketplace, but we've obviously got big commitments already. The inventory that is going to be available is going to be limited, and then there's costs associated with those acquisitions. Some of it is in terms of prospect value. Some of it is in terms of money, unquote. We will see what the Yankees' needs are and where they are in the standings and what is truly available before the August the 1st trade deadline. The current reality is that Cole will be the league's highest paid pitching coach this season on a club still expected to win the pennant without him. And again, that feature entitled Yankees Expectations Not Changed Without Cole, written by Pete Caldera of USA Today Network. And from baseball news, let's turn now to some basketball news and the NCAA tournament. Headline reads, Eight Burning March Madness Takes. This feature written by Blake Topmeyer, columnist for USA Today Network. Bring on the madness. We're days away from our brackets being busted. In the meantime, we can harbor visions of correctly predicting that first-round upset that no one saw coming, acing our Final Four picks, and winning a bracket pool. While you wait for tip-off, here are eight burning thoughts and predictions off this men's NCAA tournament bracket. First, nobody got snubbed. The North Carolina Tar Heels' one-win, 12-loss record against Quad 1 opponents tells me that they should feel fortunate to be competing in a play-in game and not left out of the bracket. However, I am also unconvinced that a clearly better option existed. Indiana, Boise State, and West Virginia possess the best resumes of omitted teams. Indiana's NET rating of number 54 came in 18 spots behind North Carolina. Boise State, trying to become the Mountain West's fifth qualifier, lost 10 games, including a dreaded Quad 4 loss. And West Virginia lost 5 of its final 9 games. Nobody truly got snubbed. This collection of bubble teams reiterated that the tournament need not expand beyond 68 teams. Another point, SEC will thrive, Big Ten will dive. The SEC proved itself as the nation's most elite conference throughout the season, and I expect that that idea will hold up these next 3 weeks. The SEC's sheer volume positions it for success. The SEC qualified a record 14 teams. 8 of those qualifiers earned a number 6 seed or better. That sets up the SEC to swarm the Sweet 16, and with 4 teams seeded either number 1 or number 2, the conference enjoys a strong chance of multiple Final Four qualifiers. However, I suspect that the 1985 Big East will retain its record of 3 Final Four teams. I'm capping the SEC at 2 Final Four squads, which I think will be 2 more than the Big Ten. The Big Ten came in 2nd among conferences with 8 bids, but Michigan State is the only Big Ten team ranked in the top 10 nationally by analytics guru Ken Pomeroy. The conference lacks for the SEC's scoring punch. I'm picking no Big Ten teams to reach the Final Four. And the toughest division? The South. Auburn earned the tournament's number one overall seed. Its prize? A potential second-round game against number 8 Louisville in Lexington, Kentucky. That's not a prize. That's a booby trap. I rate Louisville, which won 27 games, as the tournament's best number 8 seed. Elsewhere in Auburn's South region lurks number 2 Michigan State, the Big Ten's regular season champion, and number 5 Michigan, the Big Ten tournament champion. Also lurking in the South is number 3 Iowa State, which lost to Auburn by 2 points back in November. And the first round upset special, number 11 Drake beats number 6 Missouri. This will be a trendy upset pick for a reason. Drake rates as one of the nation's best mid-majors. The Bulldogs play lockdown defense. They beat tournament qualifier Vanderbilt in November. First-year Drake coach Ben McCollum won 4 Division II national championships at Northwest Missouri State. 4 of his players from his former school now start for him at Drake. That includes guard Bennett Sturts, the best player on either roster in this matchup. Missouri has lost 4 of its last 5. Upset special. Then there's the first round upset special part 2. Number 13 Yale beats number 4 seed Texas A&M. Here's an opportunity for Yale to inflict more pain on the SEC after it upset Auburn last season. Yale and Texas A&M are premier rebounding teams, so expect a physical game. Yale's top player, John Poulakidas, poured in 28 points in last year's upset of Auburn. Texas A&M's offense is prone to vanishing acts, and Yale could make the Aggies disappear in round 1. Also, player matchup I want to see involves Auburn's Joni Broom. If you like low post battles, number 1 Auburn versus number 9 Creighton would be a dream matchup. Auburn's Joni Broom rates as the nation's best big man. Creighton's Ryan Kalkbrenner, the 4-time Big East Defensive Player of the Year, isn't far behind on that list. The Blue Jays will face a difficult first-round test against Louisville. If they can survive that, an Auburn-Creighton matchup offers the possibility for brute and brilliance in the paint. Then there's the Final Four loaded with number 1 seeds. I'm selecting 3 number 1 seeds in my Final Four. Houston and Florida ranked among my national championship frontrunners for several weeks. They are led by a balanced cast of veterans, and each team can win with either offense or defense. I'll take those 2 number 1 seeds to the Final Four, along with another number 1 seed, Duke. That Duke pick hinges on Cooper Flagg recovering from the ankle injury that knocked him out of the ACC tournament. And in the South, I'm projecting chaos, which makes number 3 Iowa State emerging to disrupt the party of number 1 seeds in San Antonio. And the national championship pick, Houston beats Florida. Kelvin Sampson's Cougars have lost just once in overtime since November. Houston is balanced on offense, elite on defense, and armed with excellent perimeter shooters. Sampson has coached in 2 Final Fours. I predict he finally captures his first ring at age 69. And again, that feature entitled Eight Burning March Madness Takes, written by Blake Topmeyer, columnist for USA Today Network. And on the women's end, the NCAA Women's Tournament, here's a headline that reads, Bracket Predictions for Surprise Teams. This feature written by Craig Meyer of USA Today Network. While college women's basketball lost several famous faces after last season, most notably Iowa superstar and Division I all-time leading scorer Caitlin Clark, there will be plenty of intrigue surrounding the NCAA tournament this season. Can Dawn Staley and South Carolina successfully repeat as national champions? And how far can Juju Watkins, Clark's heir as the brightest star in the sport, carry her Southern Cal team? And can number one UCLA make its first ever Final Four, and once there, win a national title? Can standout guard Paige Buchers and UConn add another award to the massive trophy case that the Huskies have built up under legendary coach Gino Auriemma? Who will be the small school upstarts and Cinderellas that will pull off stunning upsets and capture millions of hearts across the country? Here's a look at which teams in the women's NCAA tournament have the best opportunities at scoring an upset. Most likely upsets in the March Madness bracket, perhaps above all else, the NCAA tournament on both the men's and women's side is defined by upsets. Here are a few games in which a team seeded 11th or lower has a good opportunity to pull out a victory as an underdog. Number 11 George Mason over number 6 Florida State. This wouldn't be the first time that a George Mason basketball team has ever picked up a big March win as a number 11 seed. Even though this Patriots team almost certainly won't make a Final Four like their male counterparts did back in 2006, they are peaking at the right time with 15 victories in their past 17 games in the respectable Atlantic 10 Conference. Then there's number 12 Green Bay over number 5 seed Alabama. Green Bay brought back 6 of their top 7 scorers from a team that went 27-7 and made the NCAA tournament last season. This year, they're even better at 29-5 and riding a 22-game winning streak. Then there's number 12 seed Fairfield over number 5 seed Kansas State. Not only are the Stags hot with 22 wins in their past 23 games, but they're getting a reeling opponent. The Wildcats of Kansas State have lost 4 of their past 6 games after a 24-3 start. And the NCAA Women's Basketball Tournament sleeper picks. Here's a group now of teams that have the potential not only to win a game, but pull off unexpected victories in the second round and beyond against top seeds that could throw brackets into chaos. First, there's number 11 seed Iowa State. It has been a disappointing season for the Cyclones of Iowa State, a preseason top 10 team that's 22 wins, 11 losses heading into the tournament. Still, this is a group that has its top 3 scorers led by star center Audie Crooks back from a squad that nearly upset number 1 seed Stanford in the second round last season. And there's number 8 Cal. The Golden Bears racked up 25 wins during the regular season, which included victories against ranked squads like North Carolina State, and Alabama. They may not be able to pull off the upset, but Coach Charmin Smith's team could, at the very least, give old Pac-12 mate USC a scare in the second round. Then there's number 7 seed Vanderbilt. There are few, if any, scoring tandems in the country that are more dynamic than Michaela Blakes and Camille Pierre, who combine to average 43.7 points per game. That kind of offensive punch could give anyone fits, including number 2 seed Duke, in a potential second-round matchup. Who will win the tournament? Unlike at many different points over the past 2 decades, the women's NCAA tournament does not have some domineering Goliath that everyone else in the field is chasing. Still, there's a handful of squads that stand out as favorites. UCLA is 32 wins, 2 losses, with its 2 losses coming against USC. That gaudy record includes wins against top 20 teams like South Carolina, USC, Ohio State, Maryland, and Baylor. If the Bruins can manage to avoid the Trojans, nobody else in the country has shown that they can beat them. And even if they do draw Watkins and USC in the Final Four, they can win that too, just as they did in the Big Ten tournament championship game. Despite losing key pieces like Camila Cardoso, South Carolina has continued to be one of the country's best teams and still has several important players who were on last year's national championship squad, a group that includes Malaysia Falwiley, Tahina Paupau, and Shloe Kitts. Add in star freshman Joyce Edwards, and the Gamecocks are right in the thick of the national title race. USC has lost just 3 times this season, with 2 of those setbacks coming against top 10 teams. As brilliant as Watkins has been, the Trojans have more than just her, with forward Kiki Irifin averaging 18 points and 8.3 rebounds per game. Then, of course, there is UConn, a program that's more than familiar with deep runs in the NCAA tournament. The Huskies have made the Final Four in 3 of the past 4 seasons. Behind another talented roster featuring Bukers, Sarah Strong, and Azzie Fudd, they enter the tournament with a record of 31-3, which included an undefeated run through the Big East. The pick here, though, is Texas. The Texas Longhorns are 31 wins, 3 losses, with every loss coming to a top 10 team, 2 of which were at the hands of South Carolina, which it could meet again in the Final Four. Sophomore forward Madison Booker is one of the best players in the country and has a strong supporting cast behind her that includes Taylor Jones, Rory Harmon, and Kyla Oldacre. They're guided not just by a talented, well-rounded roster, but an experienced coach in Vic Schaefer, who led Mississippi State to 2 NCAA championship games and has taken Texas to the Elite Eight 3 times in the previous 4 seasons. This year, the Longhorns break through and win it all. And again, that feature entitled Bracket Predictions for Surprise Teams in the NCAA Women's Tournament, written by Craig Meyer of USA Today Network. And in the last few minutes, let's look at some baseball news, some short features here. Headline reads, Paul Skenes highlights Major League Baseball opening day starter list. Pittsburgh right-hander Paul Skenes, the reigning National League Rookie of the Year Award winner, will be the youngest pitcher in 11 years to start a season opener when he takes the mound for the Pirates next week. Skeens will be 22 years and 302 days old on March the 27th when Pittsburgh plays at Miami. Jose Fernandez of the Marlins was 21 years and 243 days old when he opened the 2014 season. In its annual announcement of opening day starters, most of which had been already informally confirmed by their clubs during spring training, Major League Baseball also revealed on Tuesday that Skeens will be the fastest first overall draft pick to make an opening day start. Skeens was drafted by the Pirates in 2023. Mike Moore was the first selection by Seattle in 1981 and started opening day for the Mariners in 1984. And Steven Strasburg was the top pick by Washington in 2009 and made his first opening day start for the Nationals in 2012. Three natives of Japan got the nods for their openers, the most in Major League Baseball history. Shota Imanaga of the Chicago Cubs and Yoshinobu Yamamoto of the Los Angeles Dodgers were the starters for the grand opener in Tokyo earlier on Tuesday, with a 4-1 win for Yamamoto and the Dodgers. That's all the time that we have for this edition of Sports Today. My name is Bill, volunteer reader here at Sun Sounds of Arizona. Have a great evening. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org/broadcast info. And you could hear Sun Sounds on your smart home device.